Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
You heard of Urban Float?
I love Urban Float.
Oh, good. Well, I'm going to read their ad. Okay. Hey, you heard of Urban Float? If you like to relax and disconnect, you should check out Urban Float in Rehoboth Beach, Delaware, located next to Rosenfeld's Jewish Deli in the new Ocean Atlantic Shopping Center on Route 1 North. Guests of Urban Float get to relax and float in their own flotation pod filled with purified skin temperature water and 1,200 pounds of dissolved Epsom salts. The health benefits are profound. I love it. You can book your first float at urbanfloat.com. Just be sure to select the Rehoboth Beach location and use the code FIRSTTIME at checkout to receive 50% off your first float. Renew, refresh, revive at Urban Float. Good morning. How are you? Is it? Yep, we're still in the morning. I get lost in this place sometimes. I'm like, good morning. It's like 3 in the afternoon.
It's dark in here.
Is it dark?
Well, yeah, compared to outside.
Oh, my God. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay.
So what's going on? Did you have a nice weekend?
I had a lovely weekend.
Gretchen,
yes.
Welcome back, Gretchen.
Thank you.
So the first one was really about business.
Sure.
It was very official.
Well, it was about writing and business and food and...
Good stuff.
Good stuff, yeah.
Well, let's make this podcast about that same stuff. Cooking. Well, I wanted to tell you, so, you know, I grew up in Albuquerque.
Uh-huh.
Have you been out to Albuquerque?
I have.
Do you love that?
I do love that area.
Yeah,
I grew up
area.
In Southern California, in San Diego. So, yeah, it's that corner of the world.
It's different.
Home. The light's different. The way the light works on the sand and the sky and the water. And you know, just everything's so entirely golden there.
Well, you know, the New Mexico is the land of enchantment.
Yeah, it is enchanting.
It's enchanting.
It is.
The openness, the distance, the mountains, the valleys, the hills.
The
I always used to say, what's going on over there?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you're driving, you're like, wow, look at that plateau.
Have you ever read the Milagro-Beanfield Wars?
No, I'm not, a well-read guy.
That is one of the best books ever about New Mexico.
It's just wonderful. Just in general.
It is a delightful story. It's been years and years and years since I've read it.
Say it again.
Milagro-Beanfield Wars. And it was actually made into a movie. I think Robert Redford was in it, or either he directed it or something. I never saw the movie, but the book was enchanting.
Wow.
It's about a battle for a beanfield, basically. And it's intensely personal into that area. You just feel like you're there.
Well, that whole side of the country is just a different headspace too.
You know,
my wife and I, we like to go to Albuquerque. We try to go this time of year. The beginning of October starts the Balloon Fiesta.
I was just going to say, have you been to the Balloon Fest?
I grew up in Albuquerque. Mm-hmm. I moved there in 1974.
Right.
And I left in 1987.
Mm-hmm.
So I was there for a pretty big chunk of time. And while we were there, the Balloon Fiesta was, I'm not sure if it had already started, but mm-hmm. it was just kind of getting going.
Right.
And back in those days, you could chase the balloons. My dad had a blazer. We would chase the balloons.
Right.
And when you forget, you know, out here, you're like, step away from the balloon. You know, don't get too close to the balloon. Where in New Mexico, they're like,
chase the balloon.
Please chase our balloon. We need help. And we went out there. A good friend of mine, Billy, if Billy's listening, hey, Billy. Great, great family. And we went and hung out with Billy. And, you know, we had to get up at 4 a.m. We go down there where all the balloons kind of meet. And they open their trailers that carry the balloons. And on the doors of the trailers are gloves.
For everyone to help.
That's because awesome. You can't touch a balloon. They don't want to get the oil on the envelope. But they welcome the help. And, you know, the idea is you help and maybe you might get a ride.
Sure.
And so, but the whole head place out there is different. You know, I called, you know, we were trying to figure out if we were going to be able to go. We're not going to be able to go, unfortunately, but maybe in the spring of next year.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I'm like, Billy, you know, we can't go the first couple weeks of October because that's Balloon Fiesta and you literally can't rent a car.
Sure.
You can't find a hotel. It's like NASCAR week here, or at least how it used to be. Well, my buddy Billy's like, well, I got a car you can use. It's an old broken down car, but it works. Mm-hmm. It'll get you around. I'm like, oh, no. No. I mean, I appreciate it, but, you know, the last time we were there, we had a convertible Mustang. You know, it's like, I kind of like that. But, you know, they're like cars out there. They don't care. It's just, it's a vehicle.
That's what it was like growing up in Southern California. It was not as, I mean, it became car centric later, but when I was a child, it was definitely, you know, the beater cars, those were the cool cars.
Right.
Those are the ones where you wanted. You wanted the old VWs. You wanted the old Falcons. You wanted the old convertibles. You didn't want a new Mercedes.
Well, and that's, you know, my dad was the king of secondhand cars. Mm-hmm. And we had a Chevy Citation. I don't know if you remember that car. Yeah. It's hideous. But I loved it. We loved that. The stereo was sideways. It was really strange. But, you know, it was fine. It got us around. It wasn't about the idea of having a nice car, like mm-hmm. getting out of high school or in high school, my mm-hmm. first car would have never come to mind. Now sure. It seems like these kids, they want, you know, like I had a little bit of a conversation with my older son about his next car, getting a car, because mm-hmm. he's 14. And, you know, he's named off a few cars that would have never, you know, the idea of just having a newer kind of car would have never sure. come to mind when I was growing up.
Well, it was where I grew up. It was like that until I want to say the mid 80s. And then all of a sudden Hollywood came to Southern California. Like everyone moved out of L.A. They came to Southern California and it became a, you know, when you were 16, you got your brand new Mercedes convertible. And
right.
it was entirely different. And it lost the charm.
I mean,
it was no longer that sleepy little village by the sea. That,
I love seeing
you know, everyone knew people. Now you go and it's just, you're one of tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people trekking to the city.
Well, when I actually lived in Solana Beach.
Did you?
Where did you live?
Okay, so I lived in Del Mar, Escondido. I went to Del Mar, Escondido, Encinitas, Solana Beach, Rancho Santa Fe. I think that was it. Leucadia. So I lived everywhere.
So how funny is that? Because I was in Solana Beach, and then I lived in Encinitas.
Okay.
And then I lived in Carlsbad.
Okay.
And then I lived in Leucadia. It's like,
what years were you there?
Well, I moved here February of 94, so I was there 93, 92, 91, 90. I think I moved out there in 87.
Okay, 80. I was in college by then. But yeah, I'd left.
I love San Diego.
But it was fantastic.
It was weird too, because do you have this where you move someplace? I don't know how long you were there, but you know, like you move there and you hate it. Mm-hmm. I hate it here because I'd moved there from Albuquerque, and I hated Albuquerque, but I was ready, you know, and I was ready to move. Sure. But when I got to San Diego, I hate it here.
Really?
Well, it's just kind of how I am. Whenever I go somewhere new, I never really like it.
Right.
Because I kind of compare it to where I was at and the mm-hmm. friends and stuff. And then I would go, because let's be honest, my parents moved to San Diego. So mm-hmm. I kind of mooched off them.
Sure.
And of course, they had that white Spanish red terracotta house.
talking about my childhood here.
Well, and we lived at the top of Villa de Lavallo in Solana Beach, right across from Solana
That's
Beach
exactly
Country Club.
Exactly where it is.
Yeah, at that four-way stop going into Rancho.
Sure.
And, I mean, the freaking house was amazing. My dad mm-hmm. worked in Sereno Valley for mm-hmm. the Defense Department, so we had okay. an amazing house. I used to wake up, walk out in the courtyard, you know, yeah. the smell of eucalyptus. I'm like, I'm in freaking paradise.
Lemon trees and orange trees and... Yeah, well, it was pretty incredible. I went to Encinitas High School.
Wow.
San Diego High School.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, and that's, you know, that's funny because I worked for the Solana Beach School District.
Did you?
Scraping gum off desks in the summer. It was a shitty job.
Glamorous job.
Well, it was a little different time in my life, but that's what I did. But my parents, their house, the backyard, the front looked over the Solana Beach Country Club, mm-hmm. and the backyard had this deck. And it was like the house was like on a ridge. So the backside was like off a cliff. And so this deck would set up in the treetops. It was this giant hot tub. And hot air balloons would fly over.
Oh, my gosh.
Going into Rancho Santa Fe. It was paradise.
Rancho Santa Fe was pretty wild.
It was
a pretty wild place to live.
Yeah, it was.
Talking some serious money there.
Yeah. Well, and then, of course, I moved out of my parents' house. And mm-hmm. that's when I ended up in Carlsbad. Mm-hmm. I moved there with a girlfriend. And then I actually ended up getting a one-bedroom in Leucadia. Mm-hmm. I love Leucadia.
Yeah, I loved Leucadia, too. It was one of my favorites.
Do you like the band Social Distortion? Heard of them?
So I am not that into music. And I know that sounds crazy to say, but I just am not. Like, my head is always so busy that I put on music and I don't actually listen to it. I'm just in my head.
Well, that's okay. But the reason I bring them up, because I was dating this girl who was friends with the singer Mike Ness. Mm-hmm. And they were from that whole area, San Diego, you know, just Southern California. But there's a song, Highway 101.
Okay.
And it was funny because when I moved here, you know, we moved to Route 1.
Right.
But it's not.
No, I thought of that too, repeatedly. I'm like, this is like just going backwards.
Yeah, but it's not 101. It's not the 101.
Of course. And it's not even close.
And you remember there was like that road that was on the east side of Highway 101, on the east side of the tracks.
Do you remember the bumper stickers that said there's no life east of I-5? Do you remember that?
Yes, I do. But it's kind of true. You know, it was weird, right. But there was the west side of the train tracks, mm-hmm. and then there was the east side of the train sure. tracks, and it was a whole different world, right?
It was, yeah.
And if you lived by the train, which I did, because I lived on the west side of the tracks. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's funny. I lived in this one-bedroom apartment just down the street from the beach. But it was like, it wasn't a beach like we would have here. It was basically a cliff
sure.
with some weird trail wedged into the side
God,
of it
I
to get you
those
down.
Those weird trails.
Those weird trails are the best.
Them. Have you read my book yet?
The cookbook?
Yeah.
I've read some of it.
There's some really good chapters. It's big. I'm sorry.
It's all right.
There's a wonderful chapter. It's called Harvey Wallbangers. Or Wallbangers and something, I can't remember. And it is a wonderful story about going down to Black's Beach and walking down to Black's Beach.
Down
one of those cliffs. Yeah.
Well, and it was like tide pools.
Yes, remember those in La Jolla? In the tide pools?
It was tide pools all the way up the coast. I mean, sure. I think they would manufacture a couple of sandy beaches for the people, but right. for the most part, it was rocky tide pools.
Yeah. Do you remember catching abalone back before it was legal? I mean, before it became illegal? Do you remember?
I remember catching one when it was illegal, and this old man came running up and took it out of my hands and threw it in the ocean.
Okay, well, he had, you know, he was probably right.
Well, I'm sure he was right. But
when
we were
children, we used to catch them and we would eat them. We would pound, well, I would, you know, I'd pound them out and flour them and fry them. And oh my God, they were delicious.
Are they that good?
They really are. I mean, amazing.
They're that good that they've been over.
Yes.
Over farmed or yes. over harvested.
Well, they take a very, very long time to grow. So it's one of those things that we really shouldn't be eating because it's not sustainable.
Well, I can remember as a kid, my mom had, and it must have been 12 inches maybe, mm-hmm. a giant abalone ashtray. I wonder how long that thing, how old that poor guy was before they plucked
him
out.
When I was a child, they were just filled with like, you know, pot ends and stuff like that. They weren't actually ashtrays.
Pot?
I grew up on a commune part of my childhood, so yeah.
There's no shame in pot?
No, none at all.
It's fun. It's weird that there is shame in that though.
In what, pot?
Well, I have clients, especially the older ones, are like, you know, I started using CBD oil. I'm like, what? CBD oil. I'm like, oh my God, no, not you. Oh God.
Did you hear John Mulaney's sketch on how the government gave us pot? It's the first time that we've ever whined about something long enough that the government actually gave it to us.
I said a lot of prayers as a kid. Here, pull this down just a little bit. I feel like I sound great and I can barely hear you.
Okay.
There you go. Yeah, we used to sit in this camper shell, which we would ditch ninth, you know, maybe third period or something. We would go to my buddy's house, crawl into this camper shell in the freezing cold and smoke weed.
Sure.
And then back in my mind, I'd be like, God, one day maybe we can have this without.
One day we can have gay marriage and pot that's legal.
Yeah. I'll just take the pot.
No, I took, you know, I was like a single issue voter for many, many years until gay marriage passed. Now that gay marriage has passed, I can like start to vote on, you know, gun reform or something else. But
and I'm a supporter of gay marriage, yeah. But it doesn't, I'm not gay, so it doesn't really affect
yeah,
me.
But love is love.
Love is love.
Love is love.
That should be the theme of the day right there. Yeah. Love is love. Have you found it?
You know, I was actually at a funeral for somebody that I loved dearly this past weekend. Not this weekend past, but the weekend before. And I actually did their wedding right after gay marriage passed. And it was the most profound outpouring of love I've ever seen in my life.
The wedding or the funeral?
The funeral. Okay. The way everyone came together over the loss of this person that we all, his name was Russ Capps, and we all really, really loved him. And Russ was one of those people that everyone thought they were his best friend, myself included, of course.
Yeah.
And just the most loving and kind and decent person I've ever met. And so I've thought a lot about love over the last week and what love means. And yes, you know, I love my family. I love my dog. I love my friends. I have a wonderful love affair with life. But I've thought more deeply about what love means in context of your community and your society and putting back. And one of the things that I've noticed about myself over the last 3 years since I've closed the restaurant is that I've become much more insular. So, like, I'm perfectly happy sitting in my backyard for a day rather than going into my community and volunteering. And that's something that I decided when I came back from this funeral that I really needed to change. And I needed to put that love back into my world rather than just keep it within the boundaries of my property.
Well, I want to talk about love.
Okay.
I wanted to say something that, mm-hmm. you know, in the last probably 6 weeks, 5 weeks, you know, and I've noticed is that, you know, I've decided to turn off the news. And what I was thinking or what I was feeling was that the news was trying to present stuff to me that I would react like it was community. Like the world is my community or the United States is a community. And maybe it's a community as far as the world goes, but as far as community, it's not. You know, Rehoboth is our community.
Sure.
And I was, you know, it all started with the Amazon was on fire.
Right.
The Amazon's burning down. And I'm like, you know what? Good for the Amazon. I love the Amazon, but I can't think about that. I can't worry about that.
Well, I think we need to focus more on small incremental change and the things that we can do around us rather than think of the bigger picture. Because if everyone gets lost in the bigger picture, then we're not going to see the trees. You know,
exactly.
We're just seeing the Amazon forest. We're not seeing the individual trees. And maybe, you know, like being concerned about the Amazon is a good thing. Being concerned and, you know, caring about the Amazon burning down, of course, that's important. But what's more important is actually recycling your day-to-day household trash because you can actually do something about that. Or what's more important is maybe doing a pickup day in your local waterway because you can actually do something about that. And it's actually the doing that I think is what I'm looking for in my life, again, is the doing rather than the being concerned. Because being on social media as much as I am and hearing all the anger and hostility over politics and, you know, where we are in the world and all the conflicts, that's not doing anything. Doing is actually creating more love and creating more cohesiveness and more bonding.
Well, and that's my point. You know, when the news, well, and what I did was I you know, I have an app on my phone called Newsbreak, and, you know, it gives me, if something's happening in the world, it's on there.
Sure.
The Amazon burning was not on there.
Right.
And what I figured out or what I feel or guess is that this was kind of something that was kind of created. You know, maybe there is a fire at the Amazon. But I felt like it just was some drama that we were creating. Like we had a low, not a lot of news was happening.
Right.
And all of a sudden now this was the next thing. And I couldn't find an article on it. I still can't find an article on the Amazon burning. If you can find one, that's great. I can't.
Yeah, there was a bunch. There were a bunch of articles that were on BBC that I listened to BBC instead of, NPR and BBC, because I think I get a better worldview rather than a very isolated insular view. Of different perspectives, it seems to be a lot more broad-based.
Right.
And yeah, they covered it quite extensively.
Well, I didn't see anything. Okay. So I said, you know what, I'm done with the news. So I turned it off. Now, when 6 people die in our community because of drug overdose, now
right.
that to me is something that I
right.
am concerned about. Now that's
right.
something, that because I love our community. You know, I love what we have here. And when that's happening, not only is that, oh, it's bad and dirty, and you know, but it's sad. You know, that's 6 people from our area that died because of a drug overdose. That's something that I would like to react to.
So, interestingly enough that you brought that up, there is something called the Opioid Project that is looking for volunteers to learn how to administer Narcan and to be involved, and it's actually on September 25th. I don't have all the details. I've signed up, but I don't know when and where it is, but
okay.
I will post it on my social media.
Now, that is something I'd like to react to. Now,
right.
see, now that is something that helps our community.
Exactly.
So we'll have to get the details.
Yeah, I absolutely will, and we can cross-post. My friend Kristen Banger is putting it together, and she's been posting a lot about it, but, you know, I don't know where it is yet. I've just blocked the day off.
Well, we watch a lot of live PD. I know how to administer it. Shove it up their nose and start squeezing it. I mean, you know.
I think it's more complicated what they're teaching rather than just the shoving it up the nose. At least I hope it is, because that'll be a 15-minute program.
Right. Well, and, you know, I mean, I think at that point, if they're dying, it's get it in it. And remember Pulp Fiction?
Yes, I
mean,
I
think anything other than that is better, right?
Every time I hear about Narcan, I think about that scene.
Give me a marker. And he marks him, and then boom! And then she jumps up.
Right.
But, I mean, I think the real, you know, at every retail place, maybe we should have like a Narcan station.
Well, you know, what's interesting is Holly, my daughter, the eldest one, she was trying to have Narcan in the high schools, in her high school specifically, and she got absolutely no help whatsoever. In fact, that was a stone wall.
Well, it's probably the same thing as like providing prophylactics, right?
I guess so.
Because simple-minded people think that if we have Narcan, that we're promoting the use of heroin.
Right.
That's fucking stupid.
And I completely agree with that. It is stupid because if people are dying, we need to do something to react to it. We obviously don't have the systems in place right now to prevent people from becoming addicted because it's happening in just fantastic numbers. I was listening to some statistics the other day, and I'm not really good at retaining those things, but it was staggering how many people have died from opioid-related overdoses in the last 6 years.
As you get old, how old are you?
Too old to okay. answer that
I mean,
question.
50, I mean, you're 50 somewhere?
Yeah, 50 okay. somewhere.
Halfway through. We're young old people, right?
We're young old people. Very hot, good-looking old people.
Was that about me?
Yes. Okay. Absolutely.
I agree. You look terrific. I'll take any. No.
I look like I'm going to spread mulch after this because that's what I'm doing.
It's better than spreading other things, right?
Exactly.
Isn't it weird? And I'll speak for me. It just seems the older I get, it's the hypocrisy in the world just seems to just come out at me. You know, this, you know, whose fault is it that all these people have died from heroin overdoses?
So I have a perspective on this, which I'll throw at you and see what you think about it. One of my feelings about hypocrisy is when you've lived a very full life and you've made a lot of mistakes, you're a lot more understanding about other people's mistakes than you would be if you led an insular life with not a lot of deviations. And, you know, I talk a lot in my book about being addicted to cocaine. I talk a lot in my book about, you know, having a pretty messy life. And I think because of that, I have a lot more openness to understanding other people's addictions and understanding other people's paths. I don't know that I would be at that place if I hadn't. And I think your path has been similar to mine in many ways,
yeah,
where you have that understanding that, hey, life happens and people make stupid decisions. And it's not up to me to judge their stupid decisions. I just need to be part of my community and try and help anywhere I can.
Well, and I get that. And that's not really what I meant, though. Okay, what I mean is, like, you know, a guy like Colin Kaepernick takes a knee to protest the treatment of black people by cops.
Right.
We go crazy. Get him out of here, you know. No.
Yeah, I go crazy for Colin Kaepernick. I think he's one of my true heroes.
Yeah, I think the guy's amazing.
Yeah,
you know, incredible. What? Takes a knee because of the way black people are being treated by cops.
I mean, you talk about it and I have goosebumps. I mean, it is one of those things that was so profound.
But they're like, "That he's no patriot. He is not patriotic." But
that's a true definition of patriotism.
You got a company like Volkswagen who purposefully changes a program in their car to show that when they have emissions testing, that the emissions is below the standard that we set for these car companies. They cheated us. They tricked us and they faked us, and they allowed their car to ride around in the United States pumping out more emissions, more carbon than the test showed. They tricked us.
Right. And let's not even talk about the Sackler family and what they did. So, yes, I get exactly what you're saying.
So, but I'm like, why? Because it's about big money.
Right.
It's about money. And we all get that. But it's hypocrisy. It's like, it's ridiculous. I can't, there's some things that happen. Drug companies.
Don't you think that hypocrisy, though, is politically motivated? Because the whole piece about Colin Kaepernick is it could be capitalized on for a political moment to band together people of like minds who felt that, you know, you can make the other look a certain way by claiming that they're not patriotic. You can make the other look in a certain way. So it became a very political moment rather than a, you know what, we need to do something about violence against black teens in our country.
Yeah. Well, it all was based around President Trump is really what it was based around. The election, you know, it was campaign stuff. It was all around basically around the campaign becoming president. And that's the part I don't like about that guy. I don't really hate Trump. I just like some of the things he does. I don't like those things that he does. He creates a lot of trouble, and I didn't think it was necessary. Half this country couldn't put a musket on the fence if we had a civil war because they're all fat and overweight and don't give a shit. But that's not, you know, that's not patriotic.
Right.
I just watched The West.
The West?
What is Well, I've watched, there's a few series on Netflix. One of them is The West. The other one I started watching was the Civil War, basically how the Civil War went down.
Sure.
I didn't really understand the Civil War. I thought it was like...
What is the difference? I mean, what was their perspective that you didn't understand about the Civil War? I'm interested.
Well, I didn't really understand. I didn't pay attention to any of it, quite honestly. Okay. I chose marijuana. I skipped that class.
Remind me to tell you about my pot brownie story, but go on with the Civil War.
Well, but, you know, I thought the Civil War was, you know, infighting inside the country. It was the country fighting the British.
Right.
I didn't realize that. I didn't really watch much of it. I'm going to go back and watch it because it was, you know, something else happened. But, you know, but there's just a lot of history out there that, you know, today, if we had a Civil War, half this country probably couldn't even fight in it because they couldn't get to the damn fence post with their musket because we're out of shape and we don't take care of ourselves.
Have you ever listened to a, well, I got it in books on tape. Hold on, I'm going to try and find this guy's name. It's called Lies My Teacher Taught Me, and one of the episodes is about the Civil War, and his name is James Loewen. It is phenomenal.
Okay.
And it starts basically in the beginning of history and works all the way through, beginning of our history, I should say, and works all the way through our history and goes through the lies that we've been taught as American public school students and what really happened. And one of these is about the Civil War. Phenomenal. I used to listen to it when I was traveling back and forth, opening the restaurant from Baltimore to Lewis, and I would drive back and forth because my kids were still in Baltimore. And I would listen to it over and over and over. And there were certain chapters that I would have to pull aside off the road because I was sobbing so hard I couldn't even see.
Well, the Civil War was based, I mean, really started because of taxes.
Sure.
Taxation without representation. That was it. I mean, the British over there collecting taxes on us, and they're not even here.
Okay, you're talking about the American Revolution, not the Civil War.
Oh, is that what I'm talking
about? Yes, yeah.
That's what I meant.
Okay. The American Revolution, yes, about taxes. That's exactly what it was about.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's the show I saw.
Okay, see? Good. Because you have me really confused.
If anybody's listening to get educated, don't.
Well, and the French and the British were both involved in all of our wars, basically. I mean, there was always a hand handing money over to, you know, provide guns for one side or financial aid for one side. So there's never been just a very clean war that didn't have other people involved. Not that any war is clean, but it's always been, you know, very much a... I was talking to the kids about this yesterday in the car, and they were talking about the First World War and the Second World War. I said, you understand that the First World War was called the Great War because it was the only war that anyone knew that had been that great. And then, like, something else happens. They're like, oh, well, that was just the first Great War. Now we have two Great Wars, so let's just call them one and two. And they're like, really? And I'm like, yep, that's what happened.
What a mess.
Yeah. So we do this. So, you know, when's three?
I apologize because you're right. I meant the Revolutionary War because that's what I was. Well, that's
didn't you see Hamilton?
Yeah. Well, but you know, they had this active map, and so on this map show I'm watching, it has like how it shows all the troops moving around and the battle, and so that's how I got into it. But yeah, it's just, you know, it's as I get older, I just see these things that I'm like, early in my life, I didn't pay any attention to. And as I get older, I'm just like, oh my God, really? Do you know what's going on here? I always tell my dad, the reason we die is because nobody can stand us. We're just, nobody can tolerate us. And that's kind of,
oh my goodness.
He's that way. He just knows it all. He's seen it all. He's got it all figured out. You know, you put anything in front of me, that's bullshit. It's ridiculous. It's not true. You know, show me the proof.
Okay, when I start doing that, my kids can get rid of me, I guess.
Well, I think, you know, God takes us. Yeah. Or somebody takes us.
Somebody does.
So love.
Love.
Your definition of love early in life and your definition of love now changed?
Yeah, that's a tough one. I think I've always So for me, love is very spiritually based because I feel that the ultimate goal of our life is to embrace love in every way we can. And I'm not talking about physical love. I'm talking about spiritual love and love for one another and love for humanity. I'm talking about love in your community and love for, you know, your fellow human being that's struggling.
So love is kind of like surrender.
It is. It is surrender, but it's also acceptance. And for me,
another word for surrender.
Yes. And for me, living in sort of a place of love is my most deeply spiritual place. When I'm not living in a place of love, that's when I'm confused and I'm lost. And going back to the urban float thing, that's a great way to connect with like your loving center, your loving spirituality. I do that when I am feeling really frayed and lost, and I'll just go back into sort of that womb of salt water in the dark and really connect with God and spirituality and like try and find my center of that, you know, which I believe God is love, and find that love for yourself and for the people around you.
Well, it feels like, and you mentioned like an addiction to cocaine, isn't it? I was having a conversation with my son about, you know, alcoholism. I'm an alcoholic. And I said, you know, honestly, David, it's not that I'm an alcoholic. I'm a gluttony-aholic.
Right.
It's a life of gluttony.
Right.
I mean, it just happens to be alcohol.
Sure.
But I said, really, my first drug was women.
Right.
You know, women made me feel a little funnier, a little taller, a little faster, clever. You know, it started changing my feelings of myself, my first girlfriend. And then it would later be pot, drugs, alcohol. Alcohol was just the last one I could legally buy.
Sure.
You know,
and it's the cheapest.
Yeah, I mean, I was into many other many illegal drugs when I was out in San Diego. That's why I had to get out of there.
Sure.
But alcohol was just the last one I could use. But it was always just about me.
Right.
You know, there's a whole group of people in my life that would prefer I didn't do this, but I'm going to choose this.
I'm going to do what I want.
It's a life of self-centered living.
Right.
Gluttony. You know, I always picture the, I forget the name of the movie. I think it was, I forget. But the guy just sitting there eating and eating, and then he explodes. The Life of Ryan or something. Life of,
I don't know.
But, you know, he just eats and eats and then just blows up. But isn't that what it is? Just what can I take?
Well, and that's a metaphor for, I mean, your life blows up, certainly, when you do things like that. I mean, I know when I was addicted to cocaine, my life blew up, and that was the best thing that ever happened to me, was that blowing up, and I can't do this anymore. This has got to stop.
Well, isn't that humiliation? Humility, devastation.
Yeah.
Humility.
I like humility. Humility is very, is something I really am embracing and really like at this point in my life. It's really interesting for me not being in the public eye the way I used to, how easy it is to have humility rather than before when, you know, on the front page of the paper every week and da-da-da-da-da and, you know, winning all these awards. And it was very hard to be humble. Now, I don't want to go back to that place because I really enjoy having my little life. And it's a little life.
You've surrendered.
Yeah, it's a profoundly gentle life.
Well, that's the life I live.
Yeah.
You know, but I can still, you know, I always say the biggest problem I have is me being inconvenienced. You know, if something's not going my way, you know, I love that. I love being humble. I love recognizing everything. I love surrendering. But, you know, and I tell this story a lot. You know, I used to, you know, when I finally got sober and finally started learning about this stuff, I used to love taking the golf or the shopping cart, you know. You know, you put your groceries in the car, and then you take the shopping cart and you put it in the little shopping cart holder. Mm-hmm. Not me. I take it all the way back to the front of the store because I'm humble.
Right.
But am I being humble rightly?
So tell me what humility means to you.
Well, there's humble, there's humility, there's humiliation. They all have a different meaning to me. The word surrender, acceptance, that's it. You know, I always say, if you want to fight and kick and scream on every turn in the path, it's going to be a rough life for you. Mm-hmm. But if you want to surrender, you know, like kids are a great example. And I think kids really put a light on it, is that, you know, my job now is to take care of my kids.
Sure.
If I'm going to try to live a life of taking care of me and being making me happy all the time, and then also trying to take care of them, it's going to be...
Somebody's going to get shortchanged.
So I have to surrender. I give up. Right. I'm done. Kind of. with taking care of me. I'm done making me number one.
Sure.
They're number one. You know, my son, he's 14 and he's starting to live, he's starting to have a social life a little bit. You know, we got practice. So I'm going to be hanging out with my friends and I'm like, okay. And then he's like, well, what time am I picking you up? Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm like, oh my God, that is fucking really inconvenient right now. Cause I'm sitting here watching TV. Like I got something going on, but I'm like, and he said 8:30. Okay. I'm like, sure. That's fine. Love you. Writes back. Love you. I'm like, love you.
Yeah.
So I pick him up and he's like, I just want to tell you, I really appreciate it. I know it's a big inconvenience picking me up at 8:30. And I go, listen, I love it. It's my job.
Yeah.
I'm glad I'm available. There was a period in my life when I wouldn't have been able to pick you up at 8:30. I'd have been in the bottle.
Right.
Or in the bag or something. Right. And I surrender. Mm-hmm. I just want to provide and be there for my family and my kids and my friends and my, you know, clients. And but I still want to drive a nice car. You know, so I'm not perfect at it. But it's surrender, acceptance.
So that's humble. What's humility?
Humility. I don't know. What is it?
I think for me, and this is just for me, it's being part of a bigger picture and not being the center. It's being part of like this enormous web that, you know, it's just like every string pulls on another string. Mm-hmm. And no string controls any part of that web. It's just all interconnected and interwoven. And it's recognizing your place in that without feeling the need to be the top spider.
Yeah.
So I live a life right now that is, I would say, filled with humility. I mean, and I know that has a negative connotation, but for me, it really isn't negative at all. It's incredibly positive. You know, I live a small life and I like my small life. I like the boundaries of my life, I should say. Now, one of the things I have noticed is that because I've become more insular, I have not given back as much to the maintenance of the web, as it were. And so now that, you know, like my life has become more insular, now I'm ready to go back and start putting the spider web back in order.
So, you know, I mean, you want to talk about humility and stuff. So I've noticed that whenever I've had these moments of this kind of humility or being humble or learning about it, it's usually because there was a moment that was not so humble.
Sure.
You know, you went through one.
Sure.
Did that help? Was that a reset?
Yeah. So I suffer from PTSD, not just because of that, but from different reasons as well. So no, it wasn't a reset. It was a step backwards. And for me, having my PTSD and dealing with that has been a growth experience.
But why do you have to, why do you have to say PTSD? I mean, why? I mean, you know it, you have it. Why is it, and why would that make it any more important? I mean, to me, why would that need to be told to me? Why?
So PTSD for me is about the inability to be in large crowds and to be surrounded by people. So that's part of my reset, and that's why I've been so insular. So that is more of a way of understanding sort of the smallness, is being able to deal with that, that anxiety, that panic.
Yeah. Well, I get that. Well, what I was in, my point was, is, you know, when you went to, when you had the restaurant, mm-hmm. and then you had the incident, mm-hmm. and you're like, oh my God. And, you know, I've had incidents and I have to go, ooh, I need to check myself and I need to reset myself. And sometimes going through something like that gives me opens my eyes to new things. Like, I'm not the number one thing in the world.
Sure. I think the thing that it made me realize is there's a lot of pain in the world. And even though the incident, and I'm using air quotes here, didn't actually happen, she thought it did. And that's all that mattered to her was her pain.
Right.
And so I needed to listen to that pain, even though it wasn't my own.
Right.
I did find out sometime later that my manager had an interaction with those young women that was unpleasant. And, you know, I bear responsibility for that because it was my restaurant, but the incident with me never occurred. So it was one of those experiences that, okay, I'm in the middle of a shit storm right now. How do I handle this with dignity?
Right.
And how do I allow somebody else to express their pain without taking it on as my own and without negating it just because, for me, it's hurting me back? Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Surrender. We have to listen. I mean, you know, and I think it happens as early in our lives, you know, we kick and scream, you know, whether it's I'm right, you're wrong, yada, yada. You know, we'll fight it till the end, you know, when we're early. And then as we get older, we're like, listen, it ain't worth it.
So I didn't fight. And that's the piece that, you know, I don't think many people realize is I just didn't fight it at all. And that was probably the smartest thing I ever did for myself, was not to engage in a battle that was not of my own making.
Yeah.
And I allowed the pain of that family to be their pain and listen to it without taking it on as my own. So it was, I want to say it was a profound and eye-opening experience for me, but honestly, with so many other things that have happened in my life, it wasn't so very different. It was another step, another piece of the process.
Well, and that's kind of was my question. And I never even when you thought about getting into this conversation, quite honestly, but we went into it. And that's kind of what I meant. You know, I've had things like that happen in my life where I'm like, wow, okay. I need to step back and take a look at myself.
Sure.
And realize that I need to learn from this. And this is me, not you, me. You know, and I'll go through something. I'm like, oh, my God. I just kind of went through one. I had a client who I do her hair. And, you know, I've been doing a lot of stuff, doing podcasts and getting involved. And, you know, I've got irons in the fire. And I did her hair, and I couldn't remember her formula. So I just guessed.
Oops.
Yeah. And that's worked for me before. I don't say, like, oh, I want to just pick a number. I mean, you know, I took from what I could see. And this is a lady that comes in, not like an average 4, 5, 6 weeks. She's like 15 weeks. Right. You know, I'm dealing with a lot of gray, a lot of fading and a lot of this. So I just picked a color, and it was the wrong one. She called me. And I kind of, afterwards, I was like, ooh, it was a little dark. It was probably one level too dark.
Right.
She calls me, my hair is black. I don't even own black. I don't own black. Mm-hmm. But, you know, right away, my hair's black and it's too dark. And I'm like, you know, I want to jump in. You waited 15 weeks. You know, I had to.
Right.
I could have made 100 reasons why I was in the right.
Sure.
And I had to be like, you know what? You're right. I'm sorry. I screwed up. And it didn't work out very well. And she's supposed to come in this week, so I'm concerned. You know, because she had booked the appointment before she left, so I'm wondering if she'll cancel or if she'll show up. But you know, I had to step back and say, "Listen, you're right. I screwed up."
So one of the things I decided, and I think it was about 10 years ago, was that I'd rather be happy than to be right. And I stopped arguing about who was right and who was wrong.
But what happens if you're right?
What's that?
What happens if you are right?
It doesn't matter.
So you're just going to be like, you can't be a pushover either, right?
No, it's not that. You don't have to change people. You don't have to change perspectives. All you have to do is say you're sorry and move on. Because realistically, there's nothing that you're going to do that's going to change their mind once they've set their mind on something.
True.
So if somebody says, A, this happened and my hair is too dark, or you hurt my child, or whatever that thing happens to be, you're not going to change that by arguing about it. All you're going to do is inflame the situation.
Yeah.
So if you just say, I'm sorry, or choose to be happy over engaging in the conflict, then you can allow yourself that peace of mind. And that's one of the things I've learned to help with my PTSD, because a lot of that stems from conflict and stems from, you know, my own childhood, which was filled with conflict. And my second divorce, which is, you asked, you know, a humiliating time of my life. That was it. So I've learned that if I don't fight those sort of situations where there's no winning, let's be clear, you know, you're never going to win. It's just going to be a losing situation. Now, this is different than a kid saying, you know, I want to stay out past my curfew, or, you know, your son wanting to spend the night with his girlfriend and they're both 16. I mean, that's an entirely different situation. But this is a situation where you're not going to win and you're never going to win. So it's one of those, why it's not almost, choose to be happy?
It's almost like winning is losing.
Well, fighting is losing.
Right. I just had a thing with a good friend of mine that we are in the midst of right as we speak, that I don't know. It's weird. And it's sad.
Sure.
Good, very good friend of mine. Him and I aren't speaking right now. Mm-hmm. And I didn't do anything. I did nothing. And it's very strange that, because we are not talking. This is a guy I talk to every day.
Mm-hmm.
And he got some heated conversation with my father about politics. And, you know, I was like, I didn't defend my dad, but I said, you know, there had to be something said to him. Mm-hmm. He just doesn't attack.
Right.
And he stormed out, said he's not going to be responsible or some other bullshit, and just stormed out. And I feel like this could have been a great opportunity for him to say, listen, they're just words. I would tell him the same thing I tell my kids. They're just words.
Right.
You know, but accountability, that's a better word, honestly, that if you want to talk about a word, accountability, to me, that is when I started to find some humility, is when I started to become accountable and to find out what role I played in it. And you kind of like you were just saying, you know, is my side of the street clean?
You right.
know, did I, am I accountable? If I played a part in this, I'm sorry.
Right.
You know, 10, 20, 30 years ago, did I play a part in this? I doubt it. Go to hell. But today, you know, if I played a part in like this stuff I'm going through with my buddy, he stormed out. The last thing I said to him was, have a nice day.
Right.
You're working, something's going on in there. Right. I didn't play a part in it.
Yeah. And there's so much going on right now with the whole climate. Was this conversation politics? It probably was.
Yep.
The whole climate of politics and how supercharged those conversations are right now, which
why?
Is well because is people are so emotionally about? Polar opposites. And I have friends that sit on both sides of the aisle, and I am very clearly on one side of the aisle, but I have friends that sit on both, and I've made the decision to not lose those friendships over politics. I will not jeopardize those friendships. So I choose not to have the conversations with those friends that I don't agree with.
It's weird. I mean, are they friends? I'll speak for myself. Are these people my friends? If I can't have a conversation with them about something and they flip out and I have to be like kid gloves with these people, sure. Are they my friends?
Sure. That's not really what I mean. I mean, I'm not going to sit there and battle with them when knowing that we're not going to agree. I don't think that the friendship would be ruined. But what's the point of having the battle? Does that make sense? I mean, you know, again,
I don't
why
battle.
Fight?
I'm the same way. I don't battle with these people either. I don't get into it.
You know, I love these people. They've been in my life forever. And just because we happen to disagree on the way the country is being run right now doesn't mean that I want to lose somebody that's really important to me.
What do you think life would be like if we had no news? Well, let's just say we didn't have any TV, there wasn't any news, and just like a little ticker tape went across, you know, hurricane might be coming.
Well,
you don't think on that ticker tape it would say the Amazon's burning, do you?
I think social media is more at stake than the news in this. I mean, I feel that most people get their news from social media, first of all. And with all the fake news that's on social media, it creates this, and, you know, fake news, it creates this.
So let's just do a little test.
Uh-huh.
Me and you.
Okay.
Let's pick a social media.
Okay.
What do you want to look at? Facebook?
Well, Facebook, because
let's
go to
Facebook.
That's what I do.
I'm going to go to my Facebook, you go to your Facebook. Okay. And I'm going to go, where am I going? I'm going to go to this little thing on the left, this far little square with the little thing.
Yep.
I'm going to tap it.
Yep.
So, What's your first thing that comes up? So our minds are like we're just a blank cake.
Right.
So what's our first layer of frosting? Your first thing that comes up.
The first thing that comes up is two important things to ask your kid after school each day. Tell me about someone being nice to you. Tell me about you being nice to someone else.
Okay. That's your first layer of frosting. I like that.
Right.
That was delicious. Mine is Athena Allred's Seaside Shaman book.
Oh, very cool.
I love Athena. And she wrote a book. So, okay, very cool. Right now we're poisoned. Okay, we're first, right. Our first toxic layer. So, hey, Athena. So I'm going to go down to my next one. Friend suggestions, people I might know. Jeff Schubert.
Okay,
I don't know him.
So friend suggestions. Wait, where do you find? Oh, okay.
It's just, I'm just going. So I started off, and it was Athena. And I'm going to go to my next thing is friend suggestions.
Oh, so friend suggestions, yeah.
So my second thing is, a Rehoboth Social podcast has been posted.
I have good morning from a dog who belongs to a friend of mine. And then I have good morning from a pair of Adirondack chairs.
Okay. My next one is Neil Perry, who was a guy, and he's a photographer. And he posted a picture of a military jet.
Okay.
So then we're going to go into my next one. Singapore incidents. And it's a bird doing with a mouse to put him in the little mouse wheel. How adorable is that, right?
And I have Bob Wheatley, Chairman of Sussex County Zoning and Commission, Rehoboth Social Podcast.
Wow. Okay.
There we go.
I'm going to tell you, that was great. There was nothing negative in there. I wouldn't allow it.
But do you click on news on Facebook?
I don't.
Okay, so neither do I. So that's why it's not coming up for us.
Okay.
So, if you're somebody who clicks on news on social media, it's going to keep popping up over and over.
But
and over
the news at night is telling us that Facebook is trying to create how I think.
Right, but try buying. Okay, this is the perfect example. Try buying a pair of boots on Facebook that you see an advertisement for. You will get inundated with boot advertisements for the next year.
Is that okay?
I am not kidding. No, it's not okay. Of course it's not okay. They're tracking your usage, and they see what you see, and then they start sending you everything about it.
Well, you're right. And because I bought, and this is one of the bad, I think Facebook and all these could do a better job. I buy, like once you buy the boots, they keep advertising them.
Right.
I already bought them.
Right.
One of the things that I bought are called Ultimate Ears. And they're these earbuds that go in your ears. Mm-hmm. But every day they're in my feed.
Sure, exactly.
But if
you clickbaited on one of these stories about Trump or about, you know, one of the, you know, like they always have the who do you want to vote for in the primaries, and they have all the names of all the different contenders in the primaries. If you click on that thing once, you're going to get it every single day, all day long.
So this is my thought. I love Facebook.
Right.
I love my Facebook.
Well,
I love my feed.
Being in touch with my friends.
I love it. Right? So if something like that comes up, I delete it.
Do you?
Okay. I do. I hit this button and it says, it'll say, I want this removed, and it'll ask me why. And I say, it's not relevant to me.
Right. Okay.
And then it's taken out.
Right.
Because I really love my Facebook.
Right.
I love my page. I love my pictures. And
sure.
I love my feed.
Right.
And if anything starts screwing with it, because I appreciate my Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right. We get ads. And I hate that. But it's the cost of having this Facebook.
Sure.
You remember when the Jetsons came out? And we used to, you know, we love how the, you know, all the information, George would be like, you know, the weather and all this stuff. And we just were like, how cool is that? Well, that's part of being tracked,
right?
We need to know that.
Right.
I mean, we want that, but we don't want to give them our information about that.
I think my point, though, was because it's so stratified on Facebook, because the clickbait is so stratified, that what people are getting are things designed to enrage. I mean, and they're written, because I've written for some of these websites. And what they want is they want clickbait. You should see the list of instructions they give you for every single time they send you an article proposal or you send them an article proposal. They tell you how sensationalized they want it to be. So, I mean, I refuse to write for any of these anymore, because all they want is, you know, 10 ways to look younger for 100 years, or, you know, what is Trump doing to destroy America? They want those sensationalized articles. They do not want, you know, the BBC says that the Amazon rainforest is in trouble. They don't want those articles. They want the big clickbait stories.
I'm trying to think of the last thing that pissed me off. What's the last thing that pissed you off?
Wow, that's hard.
So it's not working.
Well, yeah, no. Oh, you mean piss me off on Facebook? Piss me off in any way.
No, I mean, and like it's something that you was put presented to you in a way that you didn't ask for, and then it pissed you off into a place where you had to react.
You know, I've taken a lot of the summer off from Facebook because, you know, just because. And there were times that, you know, I post a lot of political questions, but they're not, you know.
Oh, are you posting political questions?
I do all the time, yeah.
So you're starting to trouble.
But they're not really political questions. They're questions, they're morality questions. They're ethical questions. They're questions of, like, how do we stop gun violence? That's a perfect question. How do we stop gun violence? What do we do? And those conversations go down a rabbit hole on Second Amendment rights where, no, I didn't ask you about your right to bear arms. I asked you how we stop gun violence. That was the question.
What was the answer?
Oh, my God. There were hundreds of them.
I mean, I guess if you want to get people interacting, you know, get some conversation, create some attention, I suppose that's a good question. But I'm not sure that's a fixable.
No, probably not. But I'm a social media influencer, so that's the sort of stuff we do.
Okay, so I get it.
So, you know, I mean, it's designed to create interesting conversations. And I will say many of the conversations I've had have been fascinating.
Yeah.
There have been wonderful conversations. And I'm trying to move away from let's fix our country to let's talk about personal growth right now. Right now, my sort of trend for September is personal growth. Let's talk about personal growth and what that means.
Yeah. You know? Maybe we should all have a carry gun. That'd be kind of cool.
All have a what?
We should all have to carry a gun.
Yeah, kindergarten teachers and kindergartners carrying guns. I can see nothing would go wrong with that.
Kindergartners, but what about kindergarten teachers? I don't own guns. I don't have a gun.
I have a gun, and
I don't think we should get rid of guns.
I'm not saying get rid of guns. I'm just saying we need more rules.
You were saying that.
I would say that. I mean, I'm not saying let's get rid of guns because I do understand the gun culture of America. I have lots of friends who own guns. I used to target practice all the time. I don't now. My gun is locked in a safe. I haven't used it for years.
Well, is it even culture of guns or just freedom?
Yeah, I think they go hand in hand.
Well, they do. And I think that you take away a gun and that's like the first, you know, bit of our freedom. So whether it was a gun or pizza, I mean, it's still,
right.
It's still like, I remember there was a thing where they said, well,
pizza takes a long time to kill you.
Well, but if they took it away, there'd be a revolution.
They took away my grottos, man. There would totally be a revolution in my house.
The pizza revolution, 2019.
You see my 13-year-old. What? No grottos?
I'd remember that.
On strike.
I probably wouldn't screw the Civil War, pizza war.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
But I mean, it's because I've thought, well, why don't we just get rid of guns? But then it would be, what's next?
Right.
I remember there was this piece where they said they thought that there was a gun and it read your fingerprint. Mm-hmm. And it had to read your fingerprint before it was being used. And it seemed like a brilliant idea. It seemed like a terrific idea. But then it was like, but you're losing the freedom of using any gun.
Right. But then also, how do you decide who has the right to bear that fingerprint gun? My concern basically is about mental illness in this country and how mental illness impacts our gun violence. So that's my main concern. Now, I do think we need much, much stronger gun controls. We don't need AK whatevers and AR whatevers. We don't need any of those things. We do need to have sensible gun control laws because obviously what we're doing is not working. We need to do something that will work.
I'm not even sure there's a sensible gun law.
Well, I mean, New Zealand and Australia are perfect examples of gun reform. I mean, they've done a brilliant job.
What is it? What's their solution?
Well, I mean, they've done gun reform in the sense that they've removed guns from people that shouldn't own guns, and gun permits are harder to obtain and harder to get. And do you want that kid that's high on crack or that has a bipolar disorder? Do you want them to be able to go to a mass box store and buy a gun? I don't.
See, and that's my thing. I think a lot of gun violence is basically people that are trying to steal money to use drugs.
Well,
and a lot of that was created by the pharmaceutical company. So where's their responsibility?
Yeah. So a big portion of gun violence is people against themselves. That's suicide, of course. And that goes back to mental illness. So how do we prevent people who want to harm themselves from having guns? How do we prevent people who want to harm others from having guns? What's the solution to that? I don't have the answer.
Right.
I'm just saying there's so many questions about who has the right to. I mean, should it be easier to get a gun than a driver's license? I don't think it should be.
It's funny. You know, I've been that person. I've had mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
I've thought of killing myself, you know, and it was a lot of, I didn't learn about a lot of that stuff until I got sober.
Sure.
And worked a 12-step program and mm-hmm. learned, you know, about, you know, if I did a 4-step on a lot of this shit, mm-hmm. It's really about just me.
Right.
You know, me not getting what I want.
Sure.
You know, and it talks about, you know, Mr. Jones. And I don't know if you're familiar with the Mr. Jones story, but
no.
I hate Mr. Jones.
No, I don't know.
And, you know, if I did a 4-step on Mr. Jones, I don't hate Mr. Jones. Mr. Jones has a bigger house.
Right.
Got a pretty wife.
Right.
Better car.
Right.
I hate all that.
Right.
And what I really hate is that I don't have it.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm going to be honest, I'm going to be accountable, I'm going to take a hard look at everything, it's usually me not getting what I want.
Okay.
But it's sometimes, but I remember going to see Dr. Heckert. Mm-hmm. I said, you know, I'm depressed. Mm-hmm. He goes, well, how much are you drinking? I said, a couple beers. Mm-hmm. I was drinking a bottle of vodka a day.
Okay.
And I wanted Zoloft to fix it.
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine?
Well, yeah, alcohol is not a depressant at all.
Right. But
that was a joke.
I know. But the point is that, you know, I wasn't being accountable.
Sure.
You know, a lot of these people like, and I can remember committing suicide, and I always used to say, the only reason I don't is because I don't want to miss my own funeral. I don't want to miss all the wonderful things said about me.
I don't want to miss the wake with all the booze.
Exactly. So, you know, I wanted to write a book called Checking My Me Pressure because mm-hmm. I don't feel like we check our me pressure very
sure.
often.
Sure.
You know, and some sort of number over number, which says, you know, how much, you know, are you helping others? Where's your humility over self?
Right.
You know, like I don't even know what the hell the, you know, 60 over 90 is when blood pressure or whatever that number they spew out. But, you know, I feel like there should be a number of, you know, how much are you living for yourself or how much are you helping others? You know, how much is that going on in
your
life?
I get that. That would be a very good question to ask. But how do you think that would fly in this country? Like if we looked at the me number, where do you think we would be as a country in general?
I don't know. Can we just start like a community?
Okay.
Can we just talk about me and you for right here?
Okay.
Me and you country.
Okay.
I mean, how much are you helping others compared to taking care of self? What's your me pressure?
Yeah, so the last 3 months has been me taking care of me and my family and my dog. You know, that's been my me life. So I sort of, after the funeral for Russ, I made a decision that I was going to go back into taking care of others, not just my family. And I mean, I love my family, don't get me wrong, but they really don't need me as much anymore as they used to, which is sad. You know, like when I decided to close the restaurant, it was because my girls were at such a crucial stage of their lives. And now Holly's in her second year of college, and oh my God, she's got one of the highest GPAs in the school, if not the highest. She's like winning award after award. Hayden is just like rocking it with the music career. I mean, she's just doing incredible stuff. They don't, I mean, I'm a chauffeur. That's all I am. So, I mean, I make dinner too. Don't get me wrong. You know, I clean up their rooms, do their laundry, that kind of stuff. But they don't need me as much. So now I need to find out where I can give back to people that do need me. And I was at the Hispanic Taco Festival yesterday and I got
where
some
was
names.
That?
It was in Georgetown. It was amazing.
Oh my God.
It was so much fun.
We went to Balloons Over Sussex.
So we were going to go there afterwards, but we were so full and so exhausted. We were like ready for naps. But I got some names of some immigration attorneys and I want to start working on immigration work with people that need help because I speak fluent Spanish and you know, that's something I can do. I can help translate. I know quite a bit about the law because I've written a lot of articles about it, and I can help people know their rights. I can help.
Yeah.
You know, I have skills.
You want to give back.
Exactly. I want to give back. And then this opioid project, I mean, I really want to somehow stop the flow of suicides in Sussex County. We need to stem this. We need to stop it. And this is a small little stopgap measure. But oh my gosh, we need so much more.
The problem is how do you stop something that people don't want stopped? That's a tough.
That's a really
because
good
you know I really you know I feel bad for people that are on drugs.
Do you remember back in the late 80s when heroin was such a big thing?
No.
You don't?
Mm-mm.
Okay. Well, I was in New York then, and heroin was such a big deal, and it was killing so many people. And then it just sort of went away for a while. Like, it wasn't a big deal. It wasn't in the news. And then opioids, you know, crested again. And then heroin became another big deal again because heroin's cheaper than the opioids, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
So I sort of feel like that we're going to reach a plateau, you know, of high incidence of uses and suicides. And I think we're going to go downhill again because, first of all, the controls are going to be tightened on the opioids. There'll be less people addicted. I mean, they're giving out opioids like cotton candy. I mean, I went in the hospital because I had a cyst on my nose. And, yes, it hurt. Good heavens. But you don't have to offer me opioids. You know,
well, why not? Well, I mean, I mean, if you're in pain, it's a pain pill.
Yeah, but there are other things you can do. I mean, why?
Did you take it?
No, absolutely not.
Because I got my tooth pulled out and they gave me some opioids and I took them.
Yeah.
Because it shit hurt.
Well, and when I had my wisdom teeth pulled and I had dry socket, I took them then.
Absolutely.
Because I've never felt pain like that. I've been through three childbirths and never felt pain like that.
Yeah, right.
And I would have taken a tank load of those things.
Mm-hmm.
But that being said, the high doses of opioids, you have to be at a certain high dose for a certain amount of time. And they were handing those things out like cotton candy to people who had massive pain. So this huge creation of addicts that who were in chronic pain or in massive pain. And I have a dear, dear friend who had a terrible injury and they gave her opioids, hundreds of milligrams a day. And of course she was addicted instantly. Yeah. I mean, why would you not be? So, I mean, I think there's a lot of things that have to change about that industry and a lot of changes that have to happen with the way we look at pain and pain management and what we do.
See, I kind of feel like, you know, good luck.
Yeah.
For those people back there.
Yeah.
Good luck. If you want to get sober, there's all sorts of shit you can do. You got to find it.
Sure.
I can't.
Right.
I can't tell you to get sober. I can't take you to get sober. I can't explain to you. You got to, there's a moment in your life where you just say, God damn it, I need to be sober. Can you shut that door? I'm sorry.
Well, there was, yeah.
You got to want it.
For me, like when I decided that I wanted to get off cocaine, it was that moment. You know, I reached that moment and I said, enough, I'm done.
Right.
So basically, you know, I agree with you. You can't force somebody to say, you know, I don't want to drink anymore. I don't want to do drugs anymore. I don't want to, you know, snort heroin anymore, whatever it is that they're doing. You can't force them to say that. But I also think that we can have more responsible partnerships with drug companies. I think we can have more responsible partnerships with schools. I think we could do a lot more education. I mean, a lot. You know, I mean, there are definitely things that can happen to help curb this tide.
Well, I feel like it starts at home.
Well, absolutely.
You know, it's a conversation you have with your kids. You know, it depends if you're surrendering,
mm-hmm.
if you want to live a life of self
mm-hmm.
and do what you want to do, and hopefully your kids can, you know, work it out, or you want to be part of your kid's life.
Sure.
You know, I know people that are struggling with their kids right now, but they... You know, they're very excited how independent their kids are,
mm-hmm.
how involved with other things that they are. Mm-hmm. And their kids are basically just out partying.
Right.
And as long, you know, out of sight, out of mind.
Right.
And you're going to have trouble with your kids.
Sure.
I know for every change that I've ever made was mm-hmm. because I decided I want to make a change.
Mm-hmm.
It was not because I remember going to AA when in 1993.
Mm-hmm.
I was drunk and high and I had gotten caught or something. I think maybe I'd gotten a DUI.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember going to a meeting and I remember saying, this doesn't work. I didn't want to get hot. I didn't want to get sober.
Right, of course.
I wanted to stop getting caught.
Right. Yeah. Interesting distinction.
That's a there's a difference. I mean, you know, I always say if I could sit on the couch and drink vodka and watch SportsCenter, I would still be drinking.
Right.
But I'm a drunk driver.
Right.
I'm a womanizer.
Right.
I do all that shit when I'm drunk.
Right.
And I had to stop.
Right.
And I was tired of the uncomfortable feelings that I had.
Right.
And it was the stitches. I always say I never got I got punched in the face at Mulligan's Bar
mm-hmm.
next door to the Crystal Cafe.
Okay.
On March 31st, 1997.
Mm-hmm.
Punched in the face by the bartender. I think it was Bill.
Mm-hmm.
I never knew who hit me. I remember I fell to my knees and the blood was pouring out of my face and I looked over and Bill the bartender was coming over and the first thing I thought was he's going to come help me. He's coming to help me.
Mm-hmm.
He picked me up and threw me out the front door.
Mm-hmm.
and I was laying there on the concrete, March 31st, 1997, blood pouring out of my face, and I said, I need to go hide somewhere.
Right.
And I hit a BB for 5 days, getting sober, mm-hmm. air quotes like you like right. to do. No, I was hiding because I was embarrassed and ashamed, right. and I didn't want to explain stitches again.
Right.
Luckily, there was enough people around at the time when I, at that moment that I grabbed onto. Mm-hmm. But it would, I would drink 7 years later.
Sure.
Because I deserved it.
Right.
That's the voice. It wasn't like, oh, that beer looks good. There's a voice I was driving around. Look how good you've been doing for 7 years. Mm-hmm. You should have a drink. Mm-hmm. And I did. Mm-hmm. And I was hiding bottles by the end of the week.
Sure.
I had to go through all that, mm-hmm. work through all that garbage, humility, self-centered, mm-hmm. all that stuff to realize, you know.
And that's a lot of personal work. And a lot of people don't want to put that personal work in.
Then suffer. Okay. It's not my damn problem. Well, listen, Gretchen, no. you can. I agree. It's beautiful. Yeah. I love it. Let's help them. But you got, you know, my wife, her first husband passed away because of that. Mm-hmm. And you know, you have to make a choice
sure.
to make your life better. You did.
Sure. Yeah.
Gives us something to do, I suppose.
You said the word choice. So much of our life is choices. Do we go down this path? Do we go down the other path? What do we do now? How do we, you know, how do we handle this crisis? Do we act with dignity or do we hide? I mean, there's so many choices that we can make, and almost literally every single day, our life takes paths. It goes in different directions. And so, I've made choices along the way that I wish I hadn't, but I also look at the branches out of those choices. I mean, my second marriage is a perfect case in point. You know, I look at the branches out of those choices, and I have my beautiful daughter, and I have, you know, the wonderful growth that I had from going through that marriage. And so every different choice, even a bad one, brings you to a different place that you can make yet another choice to go a different direction. And, you know, I keep coming back to the, you know, I'd rather be happy than be right. So I've made the choice every step along the way for the last several years, 10 years, decade, I guess, that I'd rather choose to be happy over literally everything else. I'm making that choice. And, you know, like you see those bumper stickers and those shirts that says happiness is a choice. It's so much deeper than that. Like, I'm making the choice not to get angry at traffic. I'm making the choice to walk my grocery cart into the store. I'm making the choice to smile at the cashier. I'm making the choice to spread joy if I can anywhere. I'm making the choice to smile at strangers. That's a choice that we make in each step of our everyday life.
Well, but sometimes I wonder, like, just because it seems like that's a good choice to me, if it always is a good choice. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know if some of the most growing moments in my life were based around bad choices.
Sure.
In my mind.
That was my point about the second marriage. Oh. It was the worst choice I've ever made in my life, and yet out of that, I grew so much because of the humility I suffered during that marriage, because of the, oh my God, we don't have another 3 hours to talk about it, but that growth experience, you know, you right. talk about, you know, having your moment of growth, that was mine, you know, and I'm not talking about an air quote incident, I'm talking about incidents, you know, like things that you had to grow from, or else you just simply weren't going to survive, or you weren't going to, you know, you weren't going to live anymore. And that allowed me to have that humility going forward that, you know, when shit did go down at Hobo's, I was able to say, you know what, I can take this because I've taken so much worse.
Yeah.
You know, I can live through the storm. Yeah, it's bad. I can live through the storm. But, oh my God.
Fuck, man. Nothing feels like so much worse. Nothing hurts like a new storm, though. Even though we've been through them, a new storm, it's like, ooh. Ooh, whoa, wow. I wasn't like, I've been through this. I know what to do. Life's, you know, I know surrender, turn it over, you know, make amends, clean up my side of the street, you know, don't even hesitate. But fuck, that's still like, ooh, still stings.
What, not another fucking growth experience? You don't want that?
I'm tired of growing. It's funny, I had to take my son to the doctor, get his physical, and he is 5'7 and 5'8. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, shit. He's taller than me. Mm. I was 5'9". So I've stopped growing. I'm shrinking. It's not good.
I'm waiting. Hayden has another quarter of an inch before she tops me, and I can't wait for her to get taller than me.
You know what my problem really is, honestly, is that I've seen and done and gone through so much in my life, and I've made changes, and I know what it takes for today. Because, God, I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow, but for today, I know everything, all the effort, and I could still do much better. You know, even like sobriety, you know, I'm sober, but I'm not going to a lot of meetings, you know, and it's, and I'm celebrating 10 years in December. And, you know, I still need to go to meetings. I'm never done. If it's only to be there for the next person. And I'm still, you know, I'm struggling with that, you know, so I can do better.
Well, my question is, do you think personal growth ever stops? Because if the minute you stop thinking that you're going to grow personally, that's the minute that you sort of stop growing.
I'm not sure I can grow anymore.
Really?
I can rework it. I can regrow, grow in different ways.
Check back in with me in another 10 years.
Well, listen, I mean, you know, I'm growing, obviously, day by day in time. But I always say, look, I could get to, you know, I started working on myself, and there was a big mountain. And I've been working on the mountain. I've been taking apart the mountain. I finally get to the top. But guys like me, we like to run around the top and just create problems.
Right.
Like create like more issues. Like I've worked on this. I'm better. I know what to do. But I like to make more problems. I like to overanalyze it. And you know, I don't know. I feel like my mind is open enough that I can figure what's my problem. Like I said a little while ago, the only problem I have today is things that inconvenience me.
Right.
That's it. I mean, as long as I'm not drinking and doing drugs, Matt used to say, as long as you're not smoking crack and paying for hookers, it should all work out. and that's pretty simple for a guy like me to understand. I get that.
Okay.
You know, maybe it's not exactly hookers and crack, but
Matt.
That's what he used to say. Hey, man, as long as you're not smoking crack and paying for hookers, it should all work out. And I'd be like, thank you. Thanks for bringing it to the simple point, because that's true.
That's a quote we should use more often.
Post that and see. But you got to put MH. I always put everything. He used to post a lot of, he used to tell me a lot of funny stuff, and I'll write, you know, as long as you're not smoking crack and paying for hookers, it should all work out. MH, Matt Haley.
Yeah.
But that's,
you
know.
Does he still have an Instagram feed up?
I don't know. But I got a reminder. Right. I was at the, we were at this thing yesterday, and a reminder popped up, call Matt for haircut.
Yeah.
Because Matt used to say, can you call me and remind me I need a haircut? I'm like, dude, are you that special?
Yeah.
But I put it in my phone.
But he still was.
Yeah, he was. Well, and you know, listen, that was about me. You know, that was about me maintaining a relationship with Matt Haley.
Sure.
You know, as much as, you know, I would never have called Matt. Because I really thought that Matt needed me to remind him of a haircut. Mm-hmm. What I did is I put that in there so that it would remind me that I'm friends with him.
Right.
That's what was important to me. Because that's ego. That's, you know, that's still my sickness. I'm still not good enough. You know, I remember, you know, it was right. It was a day, 2 days before the James Beard Award. Mm-hmm. He said, you know, he called me. He wasn't like, can you come over? He's like, can you stop by? Swing by. I was like, all right. And then, you know, he's upstairs trying to pick a tie out. And I mean, he's like looking at these ties. What do you think? That looks good. It's a good tie. He's like, let's go for a walk. I was like, all right. And then we'd never done this before. We'd only done it one time. We walked around the block by his house. And he goes, there's days I just feel like they're going to figure out I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. And I'm like, dude, you're about to get the James Beard Award. You clearly know. But that's what guys like him, me, I'm still never good enough.
Right.
You know, we went to this, we got invited to this event, and I couldn't dress up enough. I couldn't be, it was a Kentucky Derby theme. And I'm like, well, we don't need to do that. We'll just go. We were invited. But we couldn't quite get ourselves together enough to fit into the Kentucky Derby theme. So I didn't feel like I was going to be good enough, so we didn't go.
Really? Wow.
Just showing up and being humans there wasn't good enough.
Right, right.
And it was all the, that's, you know, sad. The who's who. Oh, it is sad. But, I mean, at the same time, it's okay.
Well, I, you know, it depends on who you're with, so.
I was with my beautiful wife.
Exactly. Then that's good, then.
But she's like, hey, I'm not going to that. I cannot get the hat. I cannot get the dress. I'm like, okay, I'm cool with that.
Yeah. No, I understand that.
But, you know, we're still, I mean, I shouldn't speak for you. I'm still always inside, still just not good enough, you know.
Well, and I think that's definitely a hallmark of our generation too, if that makes sense. I mean, it's the creative side. It's also generational. It's also where we were raised and how we were raised. That I don't know if you felt, and certainly the experience of being an alcoholic, being a drug addict, being all those things, that's
donut
part,
lover.
What?
Donut lover.
Yes, donut lover.
They don't put you in jail though.
that's part of the whole piece of it is you never feel good enough. And I know, you talked about Matt not feeling good enough. And if anyone was good enough, it was Matt. But
damn right.
You're good enough, I'm good enough. Just because we've had this mountain and climbed up this mountain and, I've fallen down several times and circled the top a couple times and fallen down again. And, you said you're spinning around the top and, sort of making ruts in there. It doesn't mean that we haven't climbed the mountain.
No.
Like we actually climbed it. So that's a really good thing.
That's what I mean. I got to remember, I did the work.
Yeah.
I've been doing the work for, I got sober in 97.
Yeah.
I've been doing the work for 21 years. I mean, I did drink in the middle, but
right.
I've been going to,
that's
I mean.
That's part of the process.
Yeah. And I feel like one of the biggest problems with that program is one, it's alcohol. And mm-hmm. two, there's time.
Right.
Two big ego things,
Time.
Time is a huge, people,
I have 20 years.
Yeah, I got 20 years. 25 years. Oh, you got 20 years?
Let's see. The last time I did drugs. Well, other than the pot brownie. So can, I exclude that?
If you had a pot brownie, then you're not so. Remember I changed my, sobriety date because of pain pills.
Okay, so I had this huge cyst in my cheek that was the size of a baseball, right?
When? I never saw that.
This was, it was very brief. It blew up. And then I went to the ER and they were giving me pain pills. And I'm like, oh my God. So my girlfriend has pot because she's in chronic pain. She's like, oh, don't take pain pills. Here, just take this pot brownie. Mm-hmm. Right. So she's like, just have a little tiny bit of it. It's really strong. And I'm like, okay. So I take a little tiny bit. 15 minutes later, I don't feel anything. I take another little tiny bit. 15 minutes later, I don't feel anything. So I just popped the whole thing in my mouth and ate the whole thing.
Mm.
Half an hour later, I am naked, crawling across the floor, screaming, I'm so high. I hate this. I screaming.
Why were you naked? Did you feel like you had to take your clothes off?
I was hot. I was hot. I was just
you
like.
You were hot and high.
I was hot and high. I was stripped my clothes off. I climbed into the sunroom. And this is in the middle of, the summer and all our neighbors are here and I'm screaming, I'm so high. And I hate that feeling. I mean, just freaking loathe it at this point. So I was, my dog is so concerned.
And so
she's
edible high is different than smoky high.
Oh, it was awful.
Because the liver processes it differently. It's a different.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's
it was ridiculous.
You got to be careful. Edibles are dangerous. Edibles can be dangerous.
So that, other than that, nothing. But that
wouldn't change your sobriety date because of that.
Yeah. So 30 years.
So, it's funny. Sobriety is a funny thing. you have 30 years, so you're more sober than I am.
Yeah, I don't feel that way.
Right. It's a fucking racket, man. It's right. It's about learning my me pressure.
Sure.
I always thought spiritual awakening, you ask anybody spiritual, oh, I don't want to even be here. That has to do with God. I don't want anything to do with God.
Right.
Like God's such a bad thing. We can't even talk about it. But,
To
me, and I learned this in the program, we're all spiritual. We're all awake. I mean, this car, you got the vehicle and then you got the driver. I consider the driver the spirit.
Right.
You got to have the spirit.
Somebody explained it to me this way once. It was, do you think you're the most powerful thing in the universe? And the answer to me, my answer is definitely not. Well, then you're spiritual because you're not the most powerful thing in the universe. There's something stronger than you.
Well, and the way I explain it is you get a Ferrari.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You take the keys, you throw them in the middle of a garage, and then you fill the garage with boxes.
Mm-hmm.
Shut the door. You got a Ferrari, but you can't drive it.
Right.
The boxes are self-centered garbage.
Mm-hmm.
Don't have enough money. Not good looking enough. All this shit.
The ego.
and you start picking the boxes apart. Mm-hmm. And that's you. That's what the AA, you know, AA or the 12 steps or a program mm-hmm. like that, a real self-help kind of program. Mm-hmm. That's what that program allowed me to do, start taking out the boxes.
Sure.
And then once I got all the boxes out, I got the keys, and then I could drive my spirit. We're all spiritual. It's just covered up with so much self-centered garbage that you don't realize it.
Right.
But a program like that, humility, surrender, all that kind of stuff really allows me to start finding the keys to my Ferrari.
You really like those cars, don't you?
I do. I should move back to New Mexico. New Mexico, they don't give a shit about cars. I don't know. I wouldn't get a Ferrari, but I would get a... You know, Porsche just released an electric Porsche.
Did they really?
It's only $185,000.
Oh my goodness!
All right, how long did we talk? Let's see how interesting you were. Let me see what we did.
We've been talking a really long time.
Let's see what we did. Time. Oh, hour and a half.
Wow.
Gretchen, you still have a cookbook?
Yeah, absolutely. So you can go on my website and get it at www.chefgretchenhansen.com. It's called When It's Done, The Making of a Chef, or you can just get it on Amazon, which it's called When It's Done, The Making of a Chef.
And I didn't even know if we were having you on for the book. I mean, we're just, like talking to you.
So I actually finished my second cookbook. I'm still in the editing process. I finished my second cookbook, though. So this is like a straight up cookbook, how to get healthy, how to, you know, like eat whole foods, that kind of thing. I'm still searching for a title. So I'm going to post a sort of Facebook contest title. So make sure you weigh in on that and share it.
And what did you say you were? You're a social media what?
Influencer. Oh. Yeah, I know, weird, right? So
what do I pay? What can I pay you? And then you can influence people absolutely. To like this podcast?
Absolutely.
Is that how that works?
No, I share your stuff anyway. Okay. Anyway, so no, basically it's different companies will take your page and then they'll advertise on your page.
Okay.
So like, you know, the boot company will advertise on my page because I'm an influencer and people click on my page all the time.
You got some power.
Not really. I'm actually really small. But I decided I didn't want to grow it much more because it was sort of out of control. And again, it was controlling my life, and I didn't want that. So now I've sort of backtracked.
That is not good for the spirit.
Yeah, exactly. I've backtracked. And so, you know, I will be on social media for maybe an hour in the morning, and that's pretty much it. So anyway, going back to the writing, I've finished my second cookbook, and I've also finished my novel. So they're both done. The cookbook's in the editing process. The novel is finished and ready to go search for an agent.
How much do I have to be in your life to be somehow in one of your next books?
Oh, I don't know.
A mention.
I usually have contests for people to get their names in books. So you've got to watch the social media. So I have this contest, like, you know, give the best answer to this question. You get to be a character in my next book. So, yeah.
See, fun. I don't answer because I'll say stuff like Revolutionary War or Civil War.
You'd be really
whatever.
Confused.
I'm opening doors, baby. I have a gift for you.
What's that?
Green chilies.
Oh, yay. Oh, I love that. Green chilies?
Yeah.
Oh, fantastic.
I had 10 pounds delivered yesterday or 2 days ago, and I spent the weekend roasting them.
Fantastic.
Peeling them, steaming
them.
Oh,
my God.
Bagging
them. I love it.
But I only have milds.
Okay, that's fine.
The mediums are at home still.
I have Hatch green chili powder that I use all the time in lots and lots of things.
Well, they're in bags of 7.
Okay.
So if fantastic. You think you're going to cook something, I'll give you 7 chilies.
That's great.
If you think you've got something really going on, I'll give you 14.
Oh, my goodness. I don't even know what to say.
Well, I mean, you know, it's weird. I mean, I get all excited. Oh, my God, I got to order my green chilies. And then they all show up. I'm like, what the fuck am I going to do with them now?
Yeah.
Because so nobody can eat them.
Right.
My wife is like, oh, I can't handle it. Nobody
really?
Can handle it.
Hatch chili?
Oh. So these are milds. Okay. Milds are okay. Mediums, they get a little burnt.
I don't have an issue with heat. I don't like heat just for heat's sake, but yeah, my mouth is made out of asbestos.
Can I ask a favor of you?
Sure, sure, sure.
Can you do, I need a salsa recipe.
Sure, absolutely. You want a Hatch green chili salsa?
I want to make a Hatch green chili salsa that I can make into a jar.
Uh-huh.
And that I can keep, and then I can scoop out with a spoon and put on my eggs.
Do you want to have this bottled professionally and sell it, or do you just want to have it for your own personal use?
I don't want to do anything professionally.
Okay.
I mean, I can't take on another task, but I would like,
okay.
You know, what if we made, you know, if I had created a nice recipe, I don't, mm-hmm. I need you to make it.
Sure, sure, sure. I can do it for you.
Don't steal it.
Do you like tomatillos?
Yeah.
Tomatillos. Do you like garlic?
Yeah.
Onions?
I want all the standards.
Cilantro?
I want all the standards.
Okay. All right. That's good. I can work from that.
Maybe one day we could sell it?
Sure.
I mean, I'll give you credit.
Okay. Get my name on the bottle.
Nah, never mind. No credit for you.
No credit for you.
This is about being humble, Gretchen.
No soup for you.
Turn
today.
It over, hand it over, and walk away. Just give me that recipe.
Oh my god!
And I'm gonna make me some greens, baby. No, but I would like it. So I'm sure. I've got a lot of. I don't want to give up ordering my Hatch Green chilies.
Sure.
But I need a purpose.
Have you ever bottled things before? Have you ever preserved stuff?
I haven't done anything.
It's really easy.
Yeah.
I can walk you through it.
So I'm going to, but I need that. Okay. And I'll give you some green chilies, but okay. I do want something that I can, because what's happened now is I'm got bags of green chilies and then okay. I thaw them out and then I can't use them fast enough. So I would like a jar that I can make into a okay. salsa that I can sure. scoop out.
All right. Well, give me 14. Let me play with them.
Okay.
And
I will.
I'll come up with a recipe by the weekend.
I appreciate it. I love
of
you.
Course.
I'm glad you came Mwah. On. I love having you on. You're a good, Thanks. Good sport, good fun. And
it was great coffee too, by the way. Thanks.
That was Wawa.
Okay, well, it was delicious. Go Wawa.
Come back again?
I will.
All right, dear.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Awesome.